7. Nina. Hello, Nina. Nina was a trained covert operative. She'd made her way in the brothels of Ketterdam and run with the most dangerous thugs and thieves of the barrel. She'd faced killers of every variety, and occasionally she chatted with the dead. But when the well mother spoke those words, Nina felt her heart plunge right out of her chest and slide all the way to her fur-lined slippers. She only smiled. Mila, she corrected gently. A misheard name. An innocent mistake. The well mother lifted her hand and a gust of wind made the lamplight flicker, glinting off the twinkle of her eyes. You're Grisha, whispered Nina in shock. A squalor. Foxes go round in the winter, said the well mother in Vravkin. But they don't fear the cold, Nina replied. She sat down on the sofa with a heavy thump. Her knees felt weak and she was embarrassed to find tears in her eyes. She hadn't spoken her language in so long. Our good king sends his thanks and his regards. He's grateful for the intelligence you sent. It saved many Vravkin lives, and many Fjärden lives, too. Nina wanted to weep with gratitude. She'd had contact with her messengers and members of the Hringsa, but to talk to one of her people? She hadn't realized the weight she'd been carrying with her. Are you really from the convent? Yes, the woman said. When the previous well mother disappeared, Tamar Kir Batar took the opportunity to install one of her spies there. I was undercover at a convent in the Elbjin before that. How long have you been living this way, as a Fjärden? 13 years. Through wars and kings and coups. 13 years. Nina couldn't fathom it. Do you miss home? She felt like a child asking. Every day. But I have a cause, just as you do. Your campaign of propaganda has been a bold one. I've seen the results myself. The girls under my care share stories of the saints by moonlight. And they're punished for it. Oh, yes, she said with a laugh. The more we forbid talk of the saints, the more fervent and determined they become. Then I'm not in trouble. She'd been following no order when she'd come to the ice court with Hanna and started staging miracles. After the stunt she'd pulled in Gafala, she could have been dragged back to Ravka and court-martialed. General Nazielensky says you would ask that. And she said, you absolutely are. Nina had to restrain a laugh. How is she? Terrifyingly competent. And Adric, Leonie. Now that they're saints, they're not fit for espionage work. But Adric is commanding a team of squalors and Leonie is working with David Kostick's fabricators. She did essential work on the antidote to Gerda Parem. So, said Nina, they're both stationed at the Little Palace. A slight smile touched the well mother's lips. I hear they're often in each other's company. But I didn't come to share gossip or offer comfort. The king has a mission for you. Nina felt a spike of exhilaration. She'd defied direct orders from Adric to come to the ice court, to put herself in the position to help Grisha and help Ravka. She'd done what she could with her phony miracles. She'd eavesdropped and used every wile in her possession to gather information, passing along coded letters full of whatever she'd managed to glean about troop movements and weapons development. But Broom's disclosure of the places Fjärda had intended to launch their invasion had been mere luck, not true spy work. Listen closely, the well mother said. We don't have much time. She wants you to do what? Hanna whispered, her copper eyes wide when she returned to the rooms they shared and Nina described her mission. And who did I just give my confession to? A Grisha spy. What did you tell her? I made something up about too many sweets and swearing on Jell's holy days. Nina laughed. Perfect. Not perfect, Hanna said with a wince. What if I'd told her something personal about... something?
Like what?
Nothing, said Hanna, her cheeks flushing. What does she want you to do? The well mother's orders had been simple, but Nina had no idea how she was going to pull them off. Find out where the letters from Tatiana Lansov are being kept. That part isn't so bad.
And get close to the Lansov pretender, Nina said. Discover who he really is. And if there's a way to discredit him.
Hanna bit her lip.
They'd settled on her bed with hot tea and a tin of biscuits. Couldn't we just... Well, couldn't you just eliminate him? Nina laughed.
Easy now. I'm the ruthless assassin and you're the voice of reason, remember?
I think I'm being eminently reasonable. Is the Ravkin King really a bastard?
I don't know, Nina said slowly. But if the Fjartans prove he is, I'm not certain he'll be able to keep the Ravkin throne.
In times of trouble, people tended to cling to tradition and superstition. Grisha cared less about royal blood, but even Nina had been raised to believe the Lansovs had been divinely chosen to lead Ravka. And Vadik Demidov, Hannah asked. The pretender?
His death won't buy back Nikolai's legitimacy. But if he's shown to be a liar, it will cast doubt on the entire endeavor and everything the Fjartan government has claimed. Only, how are we supposed to do that?
Brum had close contact with Fjarda's royal family and presumably Demidov. But Nina and Hanna had only ever seen them from afar. The Brums dined occasionally with high-ranking soldiers and military officials, and Ilva sometimes went to play cards with the aristocratic women of the court. But that was a far cry from meeting people who could be mined for information on the Lansov pretender.
Hanna stood and slowly paced the room.
Nina loved who Hanna became when they were alone together. Around her parents, there was a tension in her, a hesitation, as if she was second-guessing every movement, every word. But when the door was closed and it was just the two of them, Hanna became the girl Nina had met in the woods, her gait loose and long, her shoulders freed from their rigid posture. Now Hanna's even white teeth worried her lower lip, and Nina found herself studying the movement like a piece of fine art. Then Hanna seemed to reach some kind of decision. She strode to the door and opened it.
What are you doing? Nina asked.
I have an idea.
I can see that, but... Mama?
Hanna called down the hall. Ilva appeared a moment later. She'd taken her braids down and her hair hung in thick, ruddy brown waves. But it was clear she'd been awake, probably discussing the Wellmother's visit with her husband.
What is it, Hanna?
Why are you two still up?
Hanna gestured for her mother to enter, and Ilva sat down on the edge of the bed.
The Wellmother got me thinking.
Nina's brows rose. Oh, did she now?
I want to enter Yerionic.
What?
Ilva and Nina said in unison.
Yerionic meant Heartwood, and it coincided with the winter festival in Vinitkala, which had just begun. The name was a reference to Jell's sacred ash, but it really referred to the tradition of eligible young women being presented at court with the goal of making a marriage. The idea of Hanna participating was brilliant. It would throw them both into a 6-week whirlwind of social events at court and potentially put her in the path of the very people who could lead them to Vadik Demidov. But Nina had thought, she didn't know what she'd thought. All she knew was the idea of Hanna being courted by a room full of Fjartan men made her want to kick something.
Hanna, Ilva said cautiously, this is not something to be entered into lightly. You will be expected to wed at the end of Heartwood. You've never wanted such a thing before. Why now?
I have to start thinking about the future. The Wellmother's visit, it reminded me of my wild ways. I want to show you and Papa that I'm beyond that now.
You needn't prove yourself to us, Hanna.
I thought you wanted me to join the court. To find a husband.
Ilva hesitated.
Please, don't do this to make us happy. I couldn't bear to think of you miserable.
Hanna sat down next to her mother.
What other options are open to me, Mama?
I won't go back to the convent.
I have a little money set aside. You could go north to the Hedjut. We still have relatives there.
I know you're not happy cooped up at the ice court.
Papa would never forgive you, and I won't see you punished for my sake.
Hanna took a deep breath.
I want this. I want a life we can all be part of.
I want that too, said Ilva.
Her voice was barely a whisper as she hugged her daughter.
Good, said Hanna. Then it's decided.
Nina still didn't know what to think.
Hanna, she said after Ilva had gone. The ritual of Heartwood is binding. If you're offered a reasonable proposal, they're going to make you choose a husband.
Who says I'll get any reasonable proposals at all? Hannah said, wriggling beneath the covers. A proposal would have to come from a man of equal social standing, who could adequately provide for Hannah, and who had the approval of her father.
And what if you do? Nina asked.
Hannah didn't want that life. Or Nina didn't think she did. Maybe Nina just didn't want it for her.
I don't know exactly, Hannah said. But if we're going to help your king and stop a war, this is how we do it.
The preparations began the next morning in a whirl of fittings and lessons. Nina still wasn't sure this was the right choice, but if she was honest with herself, the chaos of readying for Hartwood was shockingly, horrifyingly fun. She was distressed at how easy it was to get lost in the business of new gowns for Hannah, new shoes, dancing lessons, and discussions of the people they would meet at Maiden's Walk, the first event of Yerjanik, where all the hopeful young ladies would be presented to the royal family. Some part of Nina had missed frivolity. There had been too much sadness in the last 2 years, her struggle to free herself from addiction, losing Matthias, the long, lonely months in Ravka trying to cope with her grief, and then the constant fear of living among her enemies. Sometimes she wondered if she'd made a mistake leaving her friends in Ketterdam. She missed Dinej's stillness, the knowledge that she could say anything to her without fear of recrimination. She missed Jesper's laughing ways and Wyland's sweetness. She even missed Kaz's ruthlessness. Saints, it would have been a relief to hand over this whole mess to the Bastard of the Barrel. He'd have sussed out Vadik Demidov's origins, raided the Fjerdin treasury, and placed himself on the throne in the time it took Nina to braid her hair. On second thought, probably best Kaz wasn't here.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Hannah asked as she sat at their shared dressing table while Nina applied sweet almond oil to curl the short strands of her hair, red and gold and brown, a color she could never quite name.
If I am, I guess I'm jealous. I wish I could.
Nina tried to meet her eyes in the mirror, but Hannah kept her gaze trained on the array of powders and potions on the table. This was your idea, remember?
Yes, but I forgot how much I hate all of it.
What's to hate? Nina asked. Silk, velvet, jewels?
Easy for you to say. I feel even more wrong than usual.
Nina couldn't believe what she was hearing. She wiped her hands clean of oil and sat down on the bench. You're not an awkward little girl anymore, Hannah. Why can't you see how gorgeous you are? Hannah picked up one of the little jars of shimmer.
You don't understand.
No, I don't. Nina plucked the jar from her fingers and turned Hannah toward her.
Close your eyes.
Hannah obeyed, and Nina dotted the cream onto her lids, then her cheekbones. It had a subtle, pearlescent sheen that made it look like Hannah had been dusted in sunlight.
Do you know the only time I felt beautiful?
Hannah asked, her eyes still closed.
When? When I tailored myself to look like a soldier. When we cut off all my hair.
Nina exchanged the shimmer for a pot of rose balm. But you didn't look like you. Hannah's eyes opened.
But I did. For the first time, the only time.
Nina dipped her thumb into the pot of balm and dabbed it onto Hannah's lower lip, spreading it in a slow sweep across the soft cushion of her mouth.
I can grow my hair, you know,
Hannah said, and moved her hand over one side of her scalp. Sure enough, a reddish-brown curl twined over Hannah's ear. Nina stared. That's powerful tailoring, Hannah.
I've been practicing.
She drew a small scissors from a drawer and snipped away the curl.
But I like it the way it is.
Then leave it. Nina took the scissors from her hand, brushed her thumb over Hannah's knuckles.
In trousers, in gowns, with your hair shorn or in braids or down your back, you have never not been beautiful. Do you mean that?
I do.
I've never seen your real face,
Hannah said, eyes scanning Nina's features.
Do you miss it?
Nina wasn't sure how to answer. For a long while, she'd startled every time she glimpsed herself in the mirror, when she caught sight of the pale blue eyes, the silky fall of straight blonde hair. But the longer she played Mila, the easier it became, and sometimes that scared her.
Who will I be when I return to Ravka?
Who am I now? I'm beginning to forget what I looked like, she said. But trust me, I was gorgeous. Hana took her hand.
You still are. The door flew open and Ilva bustled in, trailed by maids, their arms full of dresses.
Hana and Nina leapt up from the bench, watching the maids heap piles of silk and tulle onto the bed.
Oh, Mila, you've worked wonders,
Ilva said when she saw Hana's gilded cheeks.
She looks like a princess.
Hana smiled, but Nina saw the way her fists clenched.
What have we gotten ourselves into?
Hartwood might give them everything they wanted. Access to Vadik Demidov, a chance to locate Queen Tatiana's love letters. But what had seemed like a straight path felt more like a maze. Nina picked up the amber curl Hana had dropped onto the dressing table and slipped it into her pocket. Whatever happens, I'll find a way out, she vowed. For both of us.
Maiden's Walk took place in the grand ballroom in the royal palace, just a short walk from their rooms on the White Island. Nina had been there before in a different disguise, dressed as a member of the notorious menagerie. That had been during Hring Kala, a raucous party full of indulgence. This afternoon was a more staid affair. Noble families packed the alcoves. A long, pale gray carpet stretched the length of the room, pausing at a giant fountain in the shape of two dancing wolves, and then rolling onto the dais where the royal family sat. Gathered there, the Grimgers looked like a beautiful collection of dolls, all blonde, blue-eyed, and sylph-like. They liked to claim Hedjut blood, and the evidence could be seen in the tawny warmth of the king's complexion and the younger son's thick curls. The little boy was tugging on his mother's elegant hand as she laughed in his antics. He was sturdy and rosy-cheeked. The same could not be said for the crown prince.
Prince Rasmus, lanky and sallow, looked almost green against the alabaster throne he sat beside his father. Through a tall, peaked window, Nina could just see the gleam of the moat that surrounded the White Island, covered in a thin skin of frost. The moat itself was ringed by a circle of buildings, the embassy sector, the prison sector, and the Druskella sector, all of them protected by the ice court's supposedly impenetrable wall. It was said the capital had been built to symbolize the rings of Jell's sacred ash, but Nina preferred to think of it the way Kaz had, the rings of a target. The young women participating in Hartwood gathered with their parents in the back of the ballroom.
They're all staring at me, said Hana. I'm too old for this.
No, you are not, said Nina. It was true that most of the girls seemed to be a few years younger, and they were all shorter.
I look like a giant.
You look like the warrior queen Yamelia come down from the ice, and all these little girls with their simpers and blonde curls look like undercooked puddings. Ilva laughed.
That's unkind, Mila.
You're right, said Nina, then added beneath her breath.
But it's also accurate.
Hana? A pretty girl in pale pink wearing enormous diamonds approached them.
I don't know if you remember me. I was at the convent 2 years ago.
Brenna, of course I remember, but I thought, what are you doing here?
Trying to catch a husband. I've been traveling with my family since I left the convent, so I'm a bit late to all of this.
Ilva smiled.
Then you can be late together. We'll leave you now.
But we'll be waiting for you after the processional. Nina gave Hana a wink, and then she and Ilva went to join Broom, where he stood with a general and an older Druskella named Redvin, who had trained with Broom in their youth. He was a spiteful, humorless stick of a man, and his constant demeanor of bitter resignation entertained Nina to no end. She delighted in being as ridiculous as possible around him.
Isn't it all glorious, Redvin? She exclaimed breathlessly.
If you say so.
Don't they all just look splendid?
He hadn't noticed.
He looked like he wanted to hurl himself over a cliff rather than spend another minute with her. A girl had to take her pleasures where she could.
Broom handed Nina a glass of sickly sweet punch. If he was troubled by the Fjerdan defeats at Nezki and Dolensk, he hit it well.
It would have been nice to string up the fox on our first hunt,
he had said when he returned from the front.
But now we know what the Ravkin forces can do. They won't be ready for us next time.
Nina had smiled and nodded and thought to herself, we'll see.
Is it hard to watch another woman swathed in silks and made the center of attention?
He asked, his voice low and uncomfortably intimate. Not when it's Hana. That had come out with an edge on it, and she felt Broom stiffen beside her. Nina bit her tongue. Some days meekness was harder than others. She is a good soul and deserves every indulgence. These luxuries are not meant for such as me.
Broom relaxed. You deal unfairly with yourself. You would look most fetching in ivory silk.
Nina wished she could blush on command. She had to settle for a maidenly giggle and staring down at the toes of her shoes. The fashions of the court are far more suited to Hannah's figure. Nina expected Broom to wave away her talk of fashion, but instead, the glint in his eye was calculating.
You are not wrong. Hana has flourished under your tutelage. I never believed she could make much of a match, but you've changed all that.
Nina's gut twisted. Maybe she was jealous. The idea of Hana being paired off with some nobleman or military commander tied her stomach in knots. But what if Hana could be happy here? Happy with her family? With a husband to love her? What if she could finally find the acceptance she'd sought for so long? Besides, it wasn't as if she and Nina were going to have a future together, since Nina had every intention of murdering her father.
You look so fierce, Broom said with a laugh. Where do your thoughts carry you?
To your prolonged humiliation and early death. I hope she finds someone worthy of her. I only want the best for Hana.
As do we both.
And
we shall have some new dresses cut for you as well.
Oh, no, that isn't necessary.
It is what I wish.
Would you deny me?
I would push you into the sea and do a jig as you drowned.
But Nina turned her eyes up to him, wide and thrilled, a young woman flustered and overwhelmed by a great man's attention.
Never, she said on a breath. Broom's eyes strayed slowly over her face, her neck, and lower.
Fashion may favor a trimmer figure, but men do not care for fashion.
Nina wanted to crawl right out of her skin, but she knew this game now. Broom wasn't interested in beauty or desire. All he cared about was power. It excited him to think of her as prey, pinned by his gaze as a wolf might trap a lesser creature with its paw. It pleased him to think of offering Mila gifts she could never afford, of making her grateful. So she would let him. Whatever it took to find Vadik Demidov, to help the Grisha, to free her country. A reckoning was coming. She was not going to forgive Broom for his crimes, even as he sought to commit new ones. Whatever she might feel for Hana, she intended to see Broom dead. And she doubted Hana would be able to forgive her for that. The divide was too great. The shoe had a saying, one she'd always liked.
Yuye sesh.
Despise your heart. She would do what had to be done.
You are too good to me, she simpered. I am not deserving.
Let me be the judge of that.
They're beginning,
said Ilva giddily, oblivious to the overtures her husband was making mere feet from her. Or was she? Maybe she was glad to have Broom's attention elsewhere. Or maybe she'd overlooked the man's flaws for so long that it had become a well-worn habit. Nina was glad for the interruption. It gave her a chance to assess the crowd in the ballroom as, one by one, the girls approached the fountain at the center of the room, where they were met by the crown prince.
Prince Rasmus was of average height for a Fjerdin, but eerily gaunt.
His face a portrait in angles, the cheekbones high and sharp. He had only just turned 18, but his slight build and the tentative way he moved gave him the look of someone much younger. A sapling that wasn't quite used to the weight of its branches. His hair was long and golden.
Is the prince ill?
Nina asked quietly.
Every day of his life, Broom said with contempt.
Redvin shook his grizzled head.
The Grimgers are a warrior's line. Only Jell knows how they shat out a weakling like that.
Don't say that, Redvin, said Ilva. He endured a terrible illness when he was a child. It was a blessing he survived.
Broom's expression was unforgiving.
It would have been a greater mercy if he'd perished. Would you follow that boy into battle?
Redvin asked.
We may have to, said Broom, when the old king passes.
But Nina didn't miss the look that Broom exchanged with his fellow Druskella. Would Broom consider colluding against the prince? Nina tried not to look too interested and kept her attention on the processional of young women. Once each girl reached the fountain, she curtsied to the royal family, observing from the dais beyond, and then curtsied again to the prince.
Prince Rasmus took a pewter cup from a tray held by a servant beside him,
dipped it into the fountain, and offered it to the girl, who drank deeply of Jell's waters before returning the cup, curtsying once more, then backing down the aisle the way she'd come, careful never to turn her back on the Grimgir royals, where she was greeted by family and friends. It was an odd little ritual, meant to mark Jell's blessing over the season of balls and dances to come, but Nina's focus was only partially devoted to the monotonous parade. The rest was given over to the crowd. It didn't take her long to spot the man she knew must be Vadik Demidov. He stood close to the dais, in a position of privilege, and Nina felt a shock of rage when she saw he wore a sash of pale blue and gold emblazoned with the Ravkin double eagle, the little Lansoff. He bore a striking resemblance to the portraits she'd seen in the halls of the Grand Palace. Maybe too close a resemblance. Had they found a Grisha tailor to make him look like Nikolai's father? And if so, who was he really? Nina was going to have to get close enough to him to find out. Her gaze moved on and met another pair of eyes staring directly at her, their irises so dark they seemed almost black. A chill spread over Nina's body. She forced herself to ignore the apparat's piercing stare, to keep her attention roving over the crowd, an interested bystander, and nothing more. But she felt as if a cold hand had closed over her heart. She knew the priest had come to the Fjerdan court, that he had forged an alliance to back Vadik Demidov, but she hadn't expected to see him here. There is no way for him to recognize you, she told herself. And yet his gaze had certainly felt knowing. She had to hope his interest was only in Broom's household. Ylva's slender fingers dug into Nina's arm. It's time, she whispered excitedly. Hannah was next to make the walk down the aisle. Her dress is perfect. It was. A high-necked gown of copper beads and long strings of rosy river pearls that ideally suited Hannah's coloring. Hannah's shorn head was shocking, but they'd chosen not to hide it with a scarf or headdress. Between the decadent gown and the austere beauty of Hannah's features, the effect was striking. She looked like a statue cast in molten metal. As Hannah waited for the previous girl to finish her return, her eyes flickered around the room in panic. Nina wasn't sure if Hannah could actually see her in the crowd, but she concentrated on her friend, sending every bit of strength her way. The smallest smile touched Hannah's full lips, and she glided forward.
Ulfliden, Ylva said. Do you know what that means?
Is it Hedjut? Nina asked. She'd never learned the dialect. Ylva nodded.
It means wolf-blooded. It's a compliment among the Hedjut, but not so much here. When a child is odd or behaves strangely, they say her place is with the wolves. It's a kind way of saying she doesn't belong.
Nina wasn't sure how kind it was, though it made a sort of sense for Hannah, who would always be happiest beneath a wide sky.
But Hannah has found her place here now, said Broom proudly, watching her measured steps along the gray carpet.
When she reached the fountain, Prince Rasmus handed her the pewter cup and smiled. Hannah took it. She drank. The prince coughed, hiding his face in his sleeve, and kept coughing. The queen shot up from her throne, already shouting for help. The prince crumpled. Guards were moving toward him. There was blood on the prince's lips.
A fine spray of it spattered over Hannah's beaded gown. She had him in her arms and her knees buckled as they fell to the floor together.